This is MemberCare Media, a media ministry of TWR. Up next, a conversation we believe will be helpful to you. This is a copyright production of MemberCare Media and may not be reproduced without prior written consent.
What do you think of first when you hear someone, maybe a friend, has an addiction? Well, probably the first thing that comes to your mind is drugs. And it's true, people do get addicted to drugs, maybe hard drugs, maybe some form of painkillers. But there are many other things, many other habits, many other activities that can also be classified as addictions. There are many forms of addiction. I think you know some of the usual ones we hear about. We've already mentioned drugs. And then, of course, there is alcohol, tobacco, pornography, and sex. But that's only a beginning to the list. Many behaviors and other habits are also forms of addiction, like out-of-control spending, yelling at the kids, gossip, a critical attitude, anger. Well, for the past 3 weeks, Jonathan and Carl have talked about this subject. What triggers an addiction? How can the addicted person change? Why are some people more prone to addiction and others seem to be less prone? And what is the impact of pornography on a marriage? If you missed those programs, you can find them on the MemCare website, www.membercareradio.com. Carl has been a pastor for many years, and he has been and is a counselor to expat Christian workers in many different countries. Before we wind up this conversation, let's go back and sample a few of the things that Jonathan and Carl talked about. Like, for example, what is an addiction?
Everybody you read has defined it differently. I like to think of addiction as any person, substance, event, or activity that we use to self-medicate the pain that's in our life, in our soul.
So actually, you expanded a little bit more than what we commonly hear about. Normally, we hear about drugs, alcohol, pornography being one. So you're also saying work?
Work, very definitely.
Sporting activities?
Yep.
For example, running,
yeah,
you know, things like that.
Things that we don't normally think of as being addictive. They do something for us, and we get something out of that.
Now, why is it so hard to change a habit or an addiction?
Well, mainly because change comes slowly for anybody in anything. See, the problem isn't alcohol, or the problem isn't pornography, the problem isn't drugs. If there were no drugs, if there were no alcohol, if there were no pornography, if our hands were tied behind our backs, if our voice box was removed, we'd still find some way to act out. I know guys who have filters on their computers to block the bad sites. They've installed software, so their entire web history gets reported to their accountability partner, and they still find ways to view pornography. So we still get stuck. And what we do when we work with people is we try to find the underlying cause and attack the problem at the roots. If you only work with your acting out, if you only work with those activities, those things that we see, it's like putting a bandage on a cancer. You might have some temporary improvement, but the real problem hasn't been addressed. We humans are interesting. We don't like who we are. We don't like what we do, but we don't change because change is painful.
Yes.
It takes a lot of hard work, and there's no guarantees. See, we stay in the bad situations, we stay in the bad relationships, we stay in bad habits and bad behaviors because the pain of staying seems less than the pain of changing. See, there's only two reasons why people change. One is the pain of the situation gets so bad I can't stand it anymore, so that the anticipated pain of changing seems less, so I'll make that move. Or two, we're able to see the benefit beyond the change and the reward that will come because of the change, and we're sufficiently convinced of the probability that that benefit will happen. So we can see the benefit sometimes, but we figure, I don't know if it'll happen or not, so it's not worth taking the chance. If we're really convinced that benefit will happen, or if the pain is bad enough, we'll change.
We fear change.
Yeah, because it's the unknown. We don't know what's on the other side of the change.
So we fear the change, then is there patterns to or in addictions?
Very definitely. Regardless of the problems that we face, In most cases, there is a predictable pattern of circumstances or events or behaviors that take place just prior to or connected to the undesirable behavior. And that pattern is based on beliefs and events that date back as far as our childhood. And because these actions are so deeply rooted, we often feel like we have no control or no choice. We feel stuck, feel doomed to failure no matter what, because I've tried so hard, nothing works, nothing seems to happen. And so I keep falling back into the old habits again and again and again. But the thing is, we have to identify those destructive patterns. And identifying those patterns enables us to get at the real core of the problem, and that's where we need to focus our attention. And then we have to look at, okay, why am I acting the way I do? What kind of style of relating do I have that comes out of that? What am I doing day by day that's unhealthy, that's feeding the addiction, that's setting up the stage? And we do. We set the stage for our addictions. What am I doing that's setting the stage so that when the trigger happens, I'm vulnerable? And those are the things that we have to look at and address and get back to some healthy functioning instead of unhealthy functioning. We may have to set up some boundaries. We may have to change some habits, all kinds of things. We also have to look at the triggers and identify that. What is it that sets me off? What's going on just before I act out? Is it an event? Is it a feeling? Is it a person? You know, there's all kinds of things that come into play there that we need to look at and we need to address. And we need to develop an action plan. What am I going to do about those? Now, you can't change your history. You can't change the triggers. They happen. But I can change what I do about them and how I respond to them. And so if I have a plan of action, I have to develop a trigger list, as it were, take active steps to avoid those triggers, set up accountability, you know, have somebody that I can call when I'm triggered, and then look at why am I acting out? What am I getting out of it? That's the payoff. That's the segment of the cycle that we don't often look at, the payoff. We're always getting something out of it, because if we weren't getting anything out of it, we'd quit. But we're getting something, so that's why we keep doing it. And so we have to look long and hard at what am I getting out of this acting out, out of this addiction.
Okay, there we have a little review of Jonathan and Carl talking about addictions and how they affect the expat Christian worker. A little sample of parts of the conversation that we listened to over the last 3 weeks. Last time, Jonathan and Carl talked about what it takes to get out of an addiction. Right now, though, we have one final question on that subject as we finish off this conversation.
Now, Carl, you've just answered the question of what does it take to recover and get out of an addiction? Can I do this myself? What do you recommend?
The simple answer is no, you cannot do it yourself. Many have tried and failed. You have to have some help, either a good counselor who will help you work through some of the background stuff that's causing your unhealthy functioning, that's causing the triggers to be so attractive. But even more than that, as far as preventing and staying away from these things, we need help in that too. And that's where we need somebody else. It's often difficult, especially living overseas, living in cultures that are not our own, our home culture. It's hard to find somebody that we can be totally open and honest with. The second best thing is email and VOIP. We can talk on the phone with people and even have the webcam going, and it's almost like being there. It's not quite, but almost. And so we can have that connection with an accountability partner, even though they might be in a totally different country. So we have to have somebody that we're connected to. I suggest that a guy not have his wife as an accountability person. The wife's job is not to keep her husband accountable. That's his own responsibility. His job is to love her. Her job is to love him back and respond to him, not be his policeman. And it does something to the relationship when she is. So I don't recommend the wife do that. Find somebody else somewhere who will be that kind of person for you. And then the chances of success are far greater.
Very appropriately, as we're doing this interview, there's a fire alarm going off in the background. So if you hear that, that's what it is. But that's often how we try and do things. We put the fire out rather than addressing the real core issues of what may be causing our addiction.
Right.
Now, we'll hear often about weak retreats or weak things. if I'm looking at going to something like a week event to help address on these issues, what are things that I need to think of?
Well, for one, you don't want to get your expectations too high. If it's taken 20 years to develop this habit, going to 2 weeks of counseling is not going to completely solve it. We work generally with people for a week or two. That is never enough. Mm-hmm. Often we recommend you need some long-term, you know, every week accountability with a counselor to help you work through some of these issues. Sometimes a person has to go back to their home country for that. Other times it can work locally.
If we look at doing this, if I'm looking at addressing my addiction issues, do I go by myself? Do I go with my wife? How do you recommend people come?
When they come to see us, we require, if at all possible, they come together as a couple. Mm-hmm. Because as a married couple, the two are one. And what one person does involves the other person, no matter if it's secret or not. Even if somebody's depressed, it involves the other mate. So, yeah, the two lives are so intertwined usually that it's best to have both parties work through this together.
Now, at the very beginning of this interview, we talked about just basically the fear of change.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's just more easier, it's more comfortable to stay where I'm at rather than address these issues. What can you do to encourage somebody that there is hope on the other side of that fear of change?
I guess I could give examples of men and women who have made the change and have seen the difference in their lives. Sometimes it was forced upon them. I think of one couple that quite by accident, he got found out. And it was devastating to him and to his wife. But because of that, they were able to get help. And I believe it's 3 or 4 years now that he's stayed clean. And it's great. I have regular contact with him. And he would say, yeah, there is hope. Is it hard work? You bet. Is it difficult? Yeah. Are there bumps? Yeah, huge bumps in the road sometimes. But the end result is it's worth it.
Jonathan talking with Carl about addictions, what they are, what triggers them, what they do, and how to get out of them.
This feature is a presentation of Member Care Media. Thanks for taking the time to listen. We invite you to check out our website further. We offer audio features and resources to help you in your work and daily life. In addition, we have links to other helpful websites that will be an encouragement to you and your family. This is a copyright production of Member Care Media and may not be reproduced without prior written consent.